Isn't Sharon Cook a marvel? I'm always chasing rainbows, too. I even wore a shirt like that today. So. I see our offertory people are still going, but they're almost done. Anyway, I'm a little embarrassed today. My name is Steve Compton, and I seem to be standing in front of you for every part of the service today. And I didn't know I was going to be singing a solo, so anyway. We did make sure that no children were present during this. Normally it's okay for kids to be present during the service, but I'm not so sure about this one, so I'm looking around. I think we're okay. We are Unitarian Universalists. But what does that mean? What makes us UUs and what makes us distinctively different from other faiths, ethical systems, and so forth? What do we stand for? And do we really believe in the seven principles? You know, that's the thing in the front of the hymnal. I read the first one today for the chalice lighting. I'll read it again. We covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. That sounds pretty good. But do we mean every person? Or to anticipate Sheila Jackson's sermon next week. Sheila, you out there? Where are you? Oh, there you are. Do we apply this principle even to those persons who seem to lack the most basic human qualities? Perhaps even to have no soul whatsoever? So Sheila's going to tell you more about what apparently that means, the word soul. Kathy and I are very interested in your views on this subject. Kathy and I have had many discussions about this, and she was a great help, of course, in preparing what you're about to hear. So at the end of the service today, it's going to be a shorter sermon, and we're going to have an experiment called Talk Back. We have mics. We're going to walk some mics around, and we really hope that you guys will participate and share your views about this subject. So I've collected a few examples that I hope will start the discussion. At the end of the talk today, well, I'll talk about it, to make some notes. First, we have some of the best-known examples from recent history. Adolf Hitler, Osama bin Laden, their deeds and their motivations are well-known, so we need not list them today. Do they have worth and dignity? Would you be willing to sit and talk to them, given that that setting was a secure facility? And then there are some examples of women that commit heinous crimes of neglect and abuse. It seems that for most of us, a crime by a mother against her own children is particularly troublesome. And this is, we UUs are no exception to this. I think it hits us pretty hard. So first example is Susan Smith. A well-known person to most of us, I think. She's from Union, South Carolina. On October 25th, 1994, when she was 24 years old, she placed her two young sons in a car and drowned them in a lake. Her motivation? A lot of people ask, why do people do these things? I say, having worked with criminals in a correctional facility for 12 years, including mental health counseling on death row, oftentimes the motivation is the most clear part of the act. In her case, she had a new boyfriend who she believed wanted nothing to do with another man's children. So her children became an obstacle to her new relationship, so they had to go. She is serving a life sentence and is presently incarcerated at Leith Correctional Institution in Greenwood, South Carolina. She will be eligible for parole in 2024. How long from now is that? Doesn't seem long enough, huh? You guys think she'll make parole? Yeah. We know. You know, she'll have that opportunity. More recently, Cynthia Moore Randolph, there she is, was arrested for causing her two children's death when she left him in a car in Weatherford, Texas. She told authorities that she left him in the car to punish them. The temperature reached 96 degrees that day. That was May 26th of this year. Reports are the children were there for 3 hours while she went inside, smoked pot, and took a nap. She is awaiting trial. This report I'm giving you is based on press reports. She has not had an opportunity in court, as far as I know, to defend herself. This is just a report, and it hasn't been adjudicated. But it certainly sounds bad. And finally, a story that most of, I'm sure all of us know about by now, right here in Greenville, last Thursday, according to media reports, Jessica Edens, a 38-year-old mother of two from Easley, South Carolina, shot and killed Meredith Lee Rame, 28, in the parking garage of the apartments located at the corner of Stone and Main. That's 2 miles from our house, and, I don't know, 6 miles from here. She then drove west to the parking area of Greenville Pickens Speedway on Highway 123, where she apparently shot her two children, ages 9 and 5, then herself. So 4 people died. Since Edens is dead, and there has not been time for a complete inquest, we can only guess as to her motivation. But reports are that her husband had left her for the younger Meredith Rame, and she killed her rival, herself, and the two children in a fit of jealous rage and vengeance. The Saturday Greenville News called it a baffling tragedy. There's more about it in the paper today. It just happens that Kathy, my wife, sitting right there, drove through that very intersection about 5 minutes before the first murder. A stray round from a .40 caliber bullet could have compounded this tragedy. There have been many examples of politically motivated violence. These days we hear a lot about Islamic terrorists, such as bin Laden, and those sympathetic to the Islamic State of the Levant, ISIL, sometimes known as ISIS. But many, if not most, homegrown terrorists and hate groups are right-wing white nationalists. Right here in Greenville County, about 20 miles north of here, on Highway 25 is the Dixie Republic, conspicuously marked by the large collection of Confederate flags displayed in front of the store. The Southern Poverty Law Center has identified this store as a hate group, 20 miles from here. But in the interest of fairness and balance, I give you one, James Hodgkinson, 66 years old, of Belleville, Illinois. Like me and some of you, Mr. Hodgkinson was a volunteer for the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign. And everything else that we know about him says that he was left progressive in his political views. Furthermore, his motivation for the act that he committed appears to have been a political one. He reportedly attempted to kill several members of the Republican congressional baseball team as they practiced on the morning of June 14th of this year. Representative Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana, was seriously injured. 2 others were hurt less seriously. Hodgkinson was killed at the scene by the Capitol Police. So we don't have him to question, but there is a lot of evidence. So I've given you some examples of different genders, different types of motivations. The common thread is that the crimes themselves were shocking, perhaps baffling, and heinous. So now we come to Dylann Roof, another killer from right here in South Carolina. As I'm sure you know, Roof carefully planned and carried out the assassination of 9 persons, all black, who were engaged in a Bible study at Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, on June 17, 2015. Roof was convicted in federal court of 9 counts of murder in a hate crime and other offenses, and was given a sentence of death in federal court. He was also tried in South Carolina court in which he was allowed to plead guilty and was given a sentence there of life without parole. Roof, a self-proclaimed white supremacist, said his aim was to ignite a race war which would somehow lead to the reestablishment of the supremacy of the white race. Many have been particularly struck by the cold, calculating manner in which Roof planned and carried out the crime. He came into the church, which he had identified for many months of careful research, as a target that would be particularly hurtful and offensive to any person interested in civil rights, the African-American community. He was welcomed into their circle, sat with them in an hour at least of Bible study, seemingly devout, quiet, and interested, then presented his automatic pistol, fired repeatedly and deliberately at the victims. I believe he took the time to reload, change magazines, and continued firing. He then left the church, looked around for the expected police response. There wasn't anybody there. Finding none, he drove west on Interstate 26, intending to attack another black congregation he identified in the Jedburgh community. He didn't get there, and he was apprehended later in North Carolina. As many of you know, the Emmanuel AME Church is considered to be the mother church of the southern branch of the AME, one of the most historically significant black churches in the nation. Since that event, many who identify progressives have spoken of Roof as one who deserves special punishment and does not deserve humane treatment, does not deserve to have any legal rights. I'm on Facebook and other forums. I've heard people speak about it in person, and it so troubles people that they have made comments that he doesn't deserve to live, he deserves to be tortured, he deserves the same treatment that he gave those people, things of that kind. My children went to elementary school right across the street from Emmanuel AME. I lived in Charleston for 30 years. Kathy and I have many friends there. We were members of the Charleston Unitarian Church. Richard Nelson, sitting down there, was a member of the Charleston Unitarian Church. Many others of you have ties with Charleston and know Charleston well. So it hit me hard, personally, as it did many others. Does Roof and do the others listed today deserve to be considered to have worth and dignity? What do you think? What do you think? And that's all I want to say. I want to hear what you think. Let us begin the talk back. How do we do this? I would like to offer you the opportunity to come to one of these two mics over here, and then Kathy and I have this mic, and what else do we have to take about? Okay. Kathy, you have something you want to say about this?
Do.
Okay, let's get the ball rolling.
I was looking up some of the UU-specific sorts of research or writings that had been done on this issue, and came across a transcript of the 2008 General Assembly. And a guest there was Father John Deere, who I didn't know, but apparently he is an activist, former Jesuit priest, very, very much active in protests and things like that. But he said, according to the first principle, he said, related to the first principle, he said, honoring the inherent worth and dignity of all people is the very foundation of nonviolent thinking and the root of every religion. Violence can only occur when that principle is somehow forgotten. And that really, because we are very much into the nonviolent communication practice groups that we've had here. Some of us have been to the training. So that helped me kind of understand a little bit. It's still a horrible, horrible question to try and deal with. But I think also the idea of Michelle Obama, when they go low, we go high. I think that is something that I need to remember when I'm calling for somebody's head on a pike.
Don't be shy. Come on down.
When I spoke to Steve before the service, I looked at the picture of Dylann Roof and I said, it's hard to like him. But I think the challenge is for anyone who has our religious philosophy, so to speak, it's a challenge for each one of us to make ourselves better by doing that extremely, extremely difficult thing of allowing ourselves to believe that everyone has some human spark inside of them. Guess I'll use the word soul, which is something I'm going to try very hard to define next week. But it's a challenge for our philosophy, a challenge, a very deep and difficult challenge for us to just say, well, this person is a human being, a very damaged human being perhaps, but if we believe as we believe, or we say we believe, then we have to say that's a human being.
I want to mention one thing I didn't emphasize enough here in my talk.
Sometimes we hear that we Unitarian Universalists say anything goes. Anything's okay. And that we have a trouble identifying evil in the world. Does it mean that some person has worth of dignity, that what anything they do is okay with us?
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because sometimes I feel like the violent Unitarian Universalist, the one who would use a gun, and I'll tell you why. I always felt it was important, the worth and dignity of each human being. Until decades ago, I read a story about a man who battered his wife and his children. And they tried to escape three times, and each time he found them through whatever means. And he had bars on the door. He wouldn't go anywhere without one of the children. And he had that day, the day his wife killed him, he had that day, the baby was crying. He picked it up by its feet and smashed it against the table and put it in the crib and said, he won't look that way at me anymore. And I was so shocked. And I thought, and people, the story I read was, the judge said people were calling him and saying he was terrible because he had sentenced this man to death. And he said, I believe 49 out of 50 juries would have felt the same way, that this woman had used every legal means to try to get away. And it was clear that day that he was going to kill her. And so she waited until he was asleep and drunk and shot him. Now everyone, that's terrible. And I said, they have a problem? Give me the gun. I was like, this man isn't human. This is a rabid dog. You need to put him down. Now, I don't feel that way usually. I do feel that in our treatment of human beings, we shouldn't be chaining them to a fence like an animal or treating them horribly. But I think this is a serious dilemma that we do have sometimes. And I am not so quick to say, if we only had love, love, love in the world, everything would be perfect. Because you see people, the value of each individual is each of us is different. That's what keeps some of us alive during horrible flu epidemics. And that's what also makes justice difficult and medicine difficult, because they really are practicing on you. It is the practice of medicine, because we're each different. So I would just leave with those comments. I'm not really quite that violent most of the time, but I'm not so quick to say, oh, do I really want to feed that person? But on the other hand, do I want to play God and decide who is of value and who isn't? And that is a dilemma.
So I tell you a little story that I thought was fairly illustrative of the context in which we oftentimes see things. So I was in medical school. I was in our psych class. I'd been away for a couple months. I was in Australia biking, you know, and wasn't keeping up with the news because we didn't have iPhones back then. We didn't have the internet. And I was pretty clueless as far as news was concerned because I never pick up a newspaper when I travel. I got back. It was the first day of our medical school class. And they started with a picture of a guy, and everybody was like, oh, this is terrible. Oh, my gosh, put him to death. And I was sitting in the back of the class, and I was about to get up and raise my hand when my roommate grabbed me and said, you don't know what you're doing. Sit down. And the picture they had up, I was saying, why is everybody being so awful towards this person? He looked like a normal guy to me. You know where I was in medical school? Milwaukee. You know who the guy was? Jeffrey Dahmer, okay? And so here I am. I had no context for all of these conversations. I had a simple picture up there, and I made no assumptions about it. And kind of very interesting about context. So that leads to my second sort of thought about this. I've worked in a variety of different challenging circumstances in my life. When the issue is you, when it is before you, when you have to make a decision about having an abortion, when you have to make a decision about the loved one that just got shot and murdered, when you have to make a decision because your loved ones were part of some atrocious campaign in Bosnia, when it is a personal scenario, I think all of the talk that we usually have flies right out the window. Okay, so I've taken a variety of philosophy courses, and I can tell you, it's one thing to sit there and talk about pornography, capital punishment, abortion, etc. It's another when your wife is pregnant, you're 40 years old, and you're trying to decide whether or not this pregnancy is potentially affected from a genetic scenario, and you're going to get an amnio. What are you going to do with that result? I worked in an abortion clinic for 10 years, okay? When it came to me making a decision, we didn't get an amnio. Context, personal, radically changes.
Hello, I'm a visitor. But I wasn't going to stand up because I wasn't going to say anything, but I'm outspoken. So the issue came up of dignity, and that's what really got me and moved me to come up and say something, because though I feel that every individual has particular characteristics that are redeemable as far as their character is concerned, that even though they do atrocities, and I believe that they shouldn't undergo any pain, severity, or get back from me or anyone else what they put out there, for me, I don't feel they deserve dignity. They deserve humanity, but not dignity. Because that is the only thing that motivates people when they get down to nothing, when they're up against the wall and they have absolutely nothing left and they're stripped of all of their essential needs. The only thing you have left is dignity. And to give that to somebody who has absolutely no concern and gives no dignity to their acts of atrocities, I personally just don't feel that they deserve that aspect back. Maybe I'm mean, I don't know, but anyhow.
Hello, my name is Peter Gross, and I was looking at the first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. I would like to say that of every living species, including animal, plant, because it disturbed me that we humans are the only species on Earth that does not have biological control. In other words, we continue to increase population, human population, at the expense of everything else. And so, and maybe that might cause, with more and more people, that might cause more wars or conflict, simply because people are running out of space. So, that's what I have
today. Thank you. I've just consulted with my worship associate about time. We need to stop in about 5 minutes, and I see a lot of people over there look like they want to have something to say. So if each of you would compress a little bit so we can get everybody a shot. And we, who we got on the other side? Oh, over there too. I see two people. John, you want
to
talk?
There's not enough time to pack us all in.
That's your call, John. Okay, then. Go ahead. Let's go.
My understanding in the Bible with the story about Aaron is that the punishment should be related to the your responsibility. And I am much more willing to forgive somebody who is mentally ill than I am to of a politician that will destroy the lives of many people without giving a care about it. So I think that is more punishable than people who do the heinous crimes.
I think my understanding of what we believe is radical forgiveness. That's my interpretation. I don't know if everybody shares that. But I think we must resist evil, contrast evil with other behavior, and sometimes restrain people. But forgiveness, if I may, is something that's within us personally. Jeff.
Disclaimer. I don't strongly believe in these statements. If you disagree, let's talk about it. So, I realize that this has a very personal connection to me because a girl in 2007 almost killed me. And how do I feel about her? Do I feel that she is worth indemnity? That's hard. I was talking her out of drunk driving. When she hit me with the car door and left me in a 5-week coma, I realized, yes, I think she does deserve worth of dignity, but she made the same mistake, DUI, twice more in the years following. Then there's a hard mistake that, yes, she has worth of dignity. I mean, if you can't learn from that, it's the open question. I mean, it's just hard to say, you know? I want to say that she's thrown away her life and dignity, but I can't. It's hard. It's a tough thing.
Yeah, I want to say that being a UU is not supposed to be easy. Go ahead.
Like Peter earlier talked about the extension of the animal kingdom, my reference for things like this is looking at animals. And I see us as having way more in common with other species than some people seem to have when I was been growing up and through my education. I do not see it as a negative to look for commonalities. And when I think of dog training, for example, some dogs have been mistreated, some dogs are genetically tending towards violence, towards being more aggressive. It's in their nature, it's in their genes, it's in their upbringing, and some of them have had horrendous experiences, and some of them just tend to be have different natures. How do we handle animals of different temperaments and experiences? Do the difficult ones just get euthanized automatically? Or do we allow professionals who know how to whisper to them, to bring out their better natures and give them an opportunity to shine and be what they could be. Human beings are the same. We have to make a decision how to be safe, but we have to recognize that the factors that create what we would call monsters are varied and are not always under those people's control. They have biochemistry that affects their thinking and affects their decisions. That's not a conscious choice. So we have to look at that and go, how do we live, coexist, and keep ourselves safe? How do different cultures keep themselves safe? How do we coexist? So it's just, I wanted to leave everybody with that question.
Okay. Time is very short, guys. Keep it short, please.
I'm Kirk Ford. I have a couple of points. I'll keep them short. I think that one thing is our criminal justice system, I think that we need to make decisions about the purpose of that, whether it's for punitive or rehabilitative purposes. And I think that this idea of trying to punish people in our prisons, it seems a uniquely American idea, but that's something that seems our society wrestles with. Another thing is, I think that, you know, sometimes that we shirk away from religious language, but sometimes it's the only sort of way to talk about these things. And there's a saying, you know, hate the sin, not the sinner. And I think that, you know, part of that is being able to separate the person from the deed and identifying evil as such. And, you know, when it comes to people that commit evil acts, we can still empathize with them to learn that lesson and also identify the capacity for evil that frankly exists within every person, and that's really a part of humanity as much as all the good stuff. And once we do that, then we can make the choice to, you know, responsibly search for that meaning, which is in our principles as well, instead of falling into a sort of nihilism, which I think leads to some of the things that we've seen examples of.
Okay, summarizing. Having radical forgiveness does not mean not implementing consequences. I think that the focus should be on where your state is and where your heart is when implementing a consequence on somebody, because that's going to make a big difference. So I think you need to analyze all the variables and factors and what made this person become what they were. Like she was saying, things that were out of their control. Maybe you would have been the same way had you been raised in that same environment, et cetera, et cetera. But that doesn't mean that there still doesn't need to be a consequence. Unfortunately, our prison systems are not effective. They've been proven to not be effective. We're putting a lot of money into them, but they're not rehabilitating people. And if we could fix that, then there would be more hope to possibly bring these people back. But right now, our system is not effective that way. And there's been research that shows it, but nothing's being done to really change it. So what we really need to focus on is better mental health and preventative factors. And if you are going to implement a consequence, do your own personal heart check to make sure you're at least doing it from the right place. Just like if you do have to give your own child a consequence, there's a very different thing from two parents might be doing the same consequence, but if one's doing it out of hate and out of anger, it's not going to be effective than the parent who is calm and is doing it from a place of tough love and to teach that child something to help them grow. Okay.
Thanks. All right. One more. Our last speaker will be Candy Kern Fuller. Thank you, Candy.
Thank you. And I agree with both Steve's. Being a UU is not easy. And when it is personal, it's harder. And like Jeff, you heard the story of our daughter getting hit head on 3 years ago. The guy that hit her, it was his fifth driving under suspension. It was his third driving under the influence. He was out on bond from a drug incident on New Year's Eve. And when he hit her on July the 13th. So as a UU, how do you respond to that? Because I had a lot of anger towards this young man. And I still do, because I work in the justice system as a lawyer, and when you cannot get justice for your own child in the justice system, what does it mean? And he walked out of court with a careless driving and a driving under suspension second offense and a $1,075 fine. I believed he was confidential informant for the police, and I believe that that's why he was given leeway. several of our friends who have varied backgrounds, some of them former military Navy SEALs, some of them other things, offered to make him go away. And these are people who love our daughter tremendously.
Oh my God.
And the only thing I could do was try to connect to him. I could not connect to him as a person at that time. So instead, I connected to his father. When we went to the sentencing, his father was there. And the only thing I could say is to my friends who love our daughter, I don't want another parent to go through the emotions and the reality of what I almost went through as a result of this man's acts. And I don't want to be responsible, nor do you, in any way, for causing harm to someone. And I connect it to those people that wanted to make him go away as parents. And so I guess that's the challenge that I would leave us with is, mm-hmm. how do we find commonality with people who we don't believe deserve it? And finding ways to do that.
Thank you. Maestro, in the interest of time, if you would indulge us in omitting the final closing song, Sharon, would you play something briefly, and then we'll have a quick benediction.